Second Continental Congress. It appears that Jefferson employed deist terminology in the United States Declaration of Independence, where he wrote the words creator and nature's God. Jefferson believed, furthermore, it was this creator that endowed humanity with a number of inalienable rights, such as life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. In 1776, Jefferson also proposed a motto for the United States seal. His proposal was, "Rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God." He suggested that the seal should feature an image of the biblical Hebrews being rescued by God via the Red Sea. Separating Church and State. For Jefferson, separation of church and state was a necessary reform of the religious tyranny whereby a religion received state endorsement and those not of that religion were denied rights and even punished. Following the Revolution, Jefferson played a leading role in the disestablishment of religion in Virginia. Previously, the Anglican Church had tax support. As he wrote in his Notes on Virginia, a law was in effect in Virginia that if a person brought up a Christian denies the being of a God or a Trinity, he is punishable on the first offense by incapacity to hold any office, on the second by a disability to sue, to take any gift or legacy, and by 3-year imprisonment. Prospective office holders were required to swear that they did not believe in the central Roman Catholic doctrine of transubstantiation. From 1784 to 1786, Jefferson and James Madison worked together to oppose Patrick Henry's attempts to again assess taxes in Virginia to support churches. Instead, in 1786, the Virginia General Assembly passed Jefferson's Bill for Religious Freedom, which he had first submitted in 1779 and was one of only 3 accomplishments he put in his own epitaph. The law read, "No man shall be compelled to frequent or support any religious worship place or ministry whatsoever, nor shall be enforced, restrained, molested, or burdened in his body or goods, nor shall otherwise suffer on account of his religious opinions or belief, but that all men shall be free to profess and by argument to maintain their opinions in matters of religion, and that the same shall in no wise diminish, enlarge, or affect their civil capacities." In 1787, Notes on the State of Virginia, Jefferson stated, "Millions of innocent men, women, and children, since the introduction of Christianity, have been burned, tortured, fined, and imprisoned. What's been the effect of this coercion? To make half the world fools and half hypocrites, to support roguery and error all over the world." Jefferson sought what he called a wall of separation between church and state, which he believed was a principle expressed by the First Amendment. This phrase has been cited several times by the Supreme Court in its interpretation of the Establishment Clause. In an 1802 letter to the Danbury Baptist Association, he wrote, "Believing with you that religion is a matter which lies solely between man and his God, that he owes account to none other for his faith or his worship, that the legislative powers of government reach actions only and not opinions, I contemplate with sovereign reverence that act of the whole American people which declare that their legislature should make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, thus building a wall of separation between church and state." Also offering insight into his thinking on the separation of church and state is the following quote from Notes on the State of Virginia. "The legitimate powers of government extend to such acts only as are injurious to others. But it does me no injury for my neighbor to say there are 20 gods or no god. It neither picks my pocket nor breaks my leg." Jefferson refused to issue proclamations calling for days of prayer and thanksgiving during his presidency. Yet he did so as governor of Virginia. His private letters indicate he was skeptical of too much interference by clergy in matters of civil government. His letters contain the following observations. "History, I believe, furnishes no example of a priest-ridden people maintaining a free civil government, and in every country and in every age the priest has been hostile to liberty, is always in alliance with the despot, abetting his abuses in return for protection to his own. May it be to the world what I believe it will be, to some parts sooner, to others later, but finally to all, the signal of arousing men to burst the chains under which monkish ignorance and superstition had persuaded them to bind themselves and to assume the blessings and security of self-government. While opposed to the institutions of organized religion, Jefferson invoked the notion of divine justice in his opposition to slavery. Can the liberties of a nation be thought secure when we've removed their only firm basis, a conviction in the minds of the people that these liberties are the gift of God, that they are not to be violated but with His wrath? Indeed, I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, that His justice cannot sleep forever, that considering numbers, nature, and natural means only, a revolution of the wheel of fortune, an exchange of situation is among possible events, that it may become probable by supernatural interference. While the debate over Jefferson's understanding over the separation of church and state is far from being settled, as are his particular religious tenets, his dependence on divine providence is not nearly as ambiguous, as he stated in his second inaugural address. I shall need, too, the favor of that being in whose hands we are, who led our fathers, as Israel of old, from their native land and planted them in a country flowing with all the necessities and comforts of life. Who has covered our infancy with His providence, and our riper years with His wisdom and power, and to whose goodness I ask you to join in supplications with me that He will so enlighten the minds of your servants, guide their counsels, and prosper their measures that whatsoever they do result in your good, and shall secure to you the peace, friendship, and approbation of all nations. Presidency. During the presidential campaign of 1800, the Federalists attacked Jefferson as an infidel, claiming that Jefferson's intoxication with the religious and political extremism of the French Revolution disqualified him from public office. But Jefferson wrote at length on religion, and many scholars agree with the claim that Jefferson was a deist, a common position held by intellectuals in the late 18th century, at least for much of his life. During his presidency, Jefferson attended the weekly church services held in the House of Representatives. He also permitted church services in executive branch buildings throughout his administration, believing that Christianity was a prop for Republican government. The Jefferson Bible is a document and proof that I am a real Christian, that is to say, a disciple of the doctrines of Jesus, very different from the Platonists who call me infidel, and themselves Christians and preachers of the gospel, while they draw all their characteristic dogmas from what its author never said nor saw. After his presidency, his experience in France just before the French Revolution made him deeply suspicious of Catholic priests and bishops as a force for reaction and ignorance. Similarly, his experience in America with interdenominational intolerance served to reinforce the skeptical view of religion. In an 1820 letter to William Short, Jefferson wrote, "The serious enemies are the priests of the different religious sects, to whose spells on the human mind its improvement is ominous." Jefferson also expressed general agreement with his friend Joseph Priestley's Unitarianism, that is, the rejection of the doctrine of the Trinity. In an 1822 letter to Benjamin Waterhouse, he wrote, "I rejoice that in this blessed country of free inquiry and belief, which has surrendered its conscience to neither kings or priests, the genuine doctrine of only one God is reviving, and I trust that there is not a young man now living in the United States who will not die a Unitarian." Jefferson did not believe in the divinity of Jesus, but he had high esteem for Jesus' moral teachings, which he viewed as the principles of a pure deism and just notions of the attributes of God, to reform moral doctrines to the standard of reason, justice, and philanthropy, and to inculcate the belief of a future state. Jefferson did not believe in miracles. Biographer Merrill D. Peterson summarizes Jefferson's theology, quoting here, "First, that the Christianity of the churches was unreasonable, therefore unbelievable, but that stripped of priestly mystery, ritual, and dogma, reinterpreted in the light of historical evidence and human experience, and substituting the Newtonian cosmology for the discredited biblical one, Christianity could be conformed to reason. Second, morality required no divine sanction or inspiration, no appeal beyond reason and nature, perhaps not even the hope of heaven or the fear of hell. And so the whole edifice of Christian revelation came tumbling to the ground. After his presidency, his experience in France just before the French Revolution made him deeply suspicious of Catholic priests and bishops as a force for reaction and ignorance. Similarly, his experience in America with interdenominational intolerance served to reinforce the skeptical view of religion. In an 1820 letter to William Short, Jefferson wrote, "The serious enemies are the priests of the different religious sects, to whose spells on the human mind its improvement is ominous." Jefferson also expressed general agreement with his friend Joseph Priestley's Unitarianism, that is, the rejection of the doctrine of the Trinity. In an 1822 letter to Benjamin Waterhouse, he wrote, "I rejoice that, in this blessed country of free inquiry and belief, which has surrendered its conscience to neither kings or priests, the genuine doctrine of only one God is reviving, and I trust that there is not a young man now living in the United States who will not die a Unitarian." Jefferson did not believe in the divinity of Jesus, but he had high esteem for Jesus' moral teachings, which he viewed as the principles of a pure deism and just notions of the attributes of God, to reform moral doctrines to the standard of reason, justice, and philanthropy, and to inculcate the belief of a future state. Jefferson did not believe in miracles. Biographer Merrill D. Peterson summarizes Jefferson's theology, quoting here, "First, that the Christianity of the churches was unreasonable, therefore unbelievable, but that stripped of priestly mystery, ritual, and dogma, reinterpreted in the light of historical evidence and human experience, and substituting the Newtonian cosmology for the discredited biblical one, Christianity could be conformed to reason. Second, morality required no divine sanction or inspiration, no appeal beyond reason and nature, perhaps not even the hope of heaven or the fear of hell. And so the whole edifice of Christian revelation came tumbling to the ground." Sally Hemings controversy. Whether Jefferson fathered children with Sally Hemings is the subject of considerable controversy. Regarding marriage between blacks and whites, Jefferson wrote that, "The amalgamation of whites with blacks produces a degradation to which no lover of his country, no lover of excellence in the human character, can innocently consent." In addition, Hemings was likely the half-sister of Jefferson's deceased wife, Martha Wales Skelton Jefferson. John Wales had a reputation for relations with his slaves. The allegation that Jefferson fathered children with Hemings first gained widespread public attention in 1802, when controversial journalist James T. Callender wrote in a Richmond newspaper, "Jefferson keeps and for many years has kept as his concubine one of his slaves. Her name is Sally." Jefferson never responded publicly about this issue, but is said to have denied it in his private correspondence. A DNA study in 1998 concluded that there was a DNA link between some of Hemings' descendants and the Jefferson family, but it did not conclusively prove that Jefferson himself was their ancestor. Three studies were released in the early 2000s, following the publication of the DNA evidence. In 2000, the Thomas Jefferson Foundation, which runs Monticello, appointed a multidisciplinary 9-member in-house research committee of PhDs and an MD to study the matter of the paternity of Hemings' children. The committee concluded that it's very unlikely that any Jefferson other than Thomas Jefferson was the father of Hemings' six children. In 2001, the Thomas Jefferson Heritage Society commissioned a study by an independent 13-member scholars commission. The commission concluded that the Jefferson paternity thesis was not persuasive. On April 12, 2001, they issued a report at 565 pages. It was far longer than the Foundation report, though many of those pages were devoted to a review of the evidence that the Thomas Jefferson Foundation study examined. The conclusion of most of the Scholars Commission was that the Jefferson-Hemings allegation is by no means proven. Those members' individual conclusions ranged from serious skepticism about the charge to a conviction that it's almost certainly false. The majority suggested that most likely alternative is that Randolph Jefferson, Thomas's younger brother, was the father of Eston. The National Genealogical Society Quarterly then published articles reviewing the evidence from a genealogical perspective and concluded that the link between Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings was credible. Monuments and Memorials. April 13, 1943, the 200th anniversary of Jefferson's birth, the Jefferson Memorial was dedicated in Washington, D.C. The interior includes a 19-foot statue of Jefferson and engravings of passages from his writings. Most prominent are the words which are inscribed around the monument near the roof. "I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man." Jefferson, together with George Washington, Theodore Roosevelt, and Abraham Lincoln, was chosen by sculptor Gutzon Borglum and approved by President Calvin Coolidge to be depicted in stone at the Mount Rushmore Memorial. Jefferson's portrait appears on the U.S. $2 bill, nickel, and the $100 Series EE savings bond. July 8, 2003, the NOAA ship Thomas Jefferson was commissioned in Norfolk, Virginia. This was done in commemoration of the establishment of a Survey of the Coast, the predecessor to NOAA's National Ocean Service. In 2005, a bronze monument was placed in Jefferson Park, Chicago, at the entrance to the Jefferson Park Transit Center along Milwaukee Avenue.